So I hope that we could recognize some continuity from the gospel that we had last week. As we continue in this month of November, where we focus on the four last things of death, judgment, heaven, and hell. And Matthew 25 is focused all about that final judgment. We recall last week we had the two groups of the virgins, one group wise, one group foolish. And when it came time, the door was closed and the foolish were locked out. A similar situation is presented to us today with these three servants who've been entrusted with their master's money, his talents, his possessions. We could say we had two wise and one foolish this week. There was a word in the first reading, in that poem about the faithful wife from Proverbs 31. There's a word that we saw also in the gospel. That what the husband does with the wife, the master did with the servants. That word is entrust. The husband entrusts himself to his bride. The master entrusted his wealth with his servants. What a beautiful and tender word that is. It requires a relationship, a trust, a community of persons. The church holds marriage in such high regard. Because as St. Paul reminds us that the love, but the life of a husband and wife as they come together in mutual enrichment and mutual entrustment, that relationship between a husband and wife is a reflection of Christ's love for the church. And so what we see embodied in that first reading, we can one way, in a real way, read it as a reflection of the church. That woman from Proverbs 31 is the church. And the good work she does internally, and then in turn going out doing the good work. Motivated, empowered, strengthened, because the husband has entrusted himself to her. It's that same tenderness, that same care that the master entrusts his wealth to his servants. 1-5, 1-2, and 1-1, each according to their ability. And then he goes off. And the response of the first two is basically the same. That they immediately go out and put that money to work. There's a sense of freedom that we can gather from them. That they received this gift with joy, and they immediately responded with gratitude and thanksgiving and doing the right thing. They seem to understand their master's desire, their master's intention for entrusting himself to them. Because if we recall from last week, what was the judgment against the foolish ones? That I do not know you. That lack of knowledge, that lack of intimacy that we spoke about last week. We see that again today. That the third servant clearly did not know the master. So his response was one of fear. That he didn't go off and multiply the money. He went off and buried the money. So whereas the first two were living in freedom, and that freedom led to an abundance, and that abundance was rewarded with even more. The wicked, lazy, the third servant, motivated by fear, we can say has led to death as he buried the treasure. We bury things that are dead. And he was rewarded with losing everything. This is the finality of the judgment that we're all going to face. And yes, it can be a heavy topic. But what does St. Paul remind us of in the second reading? That we don't need to be talked to about these things because we know that yes, the day is coming and he'll come like a thief in the night, but we should not be scared because we are not children of the darkness. We are sons and daughters of the light. We've been rescued from the darkness. So whenever that day comes, the reality is that day is already here. We're already living in and with Jesus. By the waters of our baptism, we've been rescued from death, from sin, from darkness, and brought into that wonderful, unapproachable light, and made heirs to the kingdom, sons and daughters, brought into the communion, the family of God. How many of us live in that reality of the immediacy, the springing up in freedom to go and use the gifts that you've been given? And how many of us cower in fear, scrupulosity, afraid that we might make the wrong move and so we don't do anything with our wrong idea of who our master is? And so the fear that we hold in our heart, we impose it upon him. That as we live this life of grace, as we live this life of virtue, as we come to know in a more deep and more intimate way the ways and the person of God, that we grow in intimacy with him, so that we can be aware of the gift that he has bestowed upon us. And with complete abandonment, put that into work. Put that into practice. Trusting that it will be multiplied time and time again. And the talents, the real understanding of that word in the time of Jesus was a unit of measure. And it's gold and silver that we're talking about today, but it was just a measure, like we use pounds. They had talents. So it's not so much a particular skill or characteristic that you have, but maybe you can think of it that way. Maybe you can draw, you can paint, you can build things, you can sing, you're really good in math, you're really good with languages, you're really good at listening, you're really good at sales. But you have these qualities about yourself that you're good at. Are you using them for the gospel? Are you putting them into work so that the name of Jesus Christ is spread throughout the world so that more people can be rescued from darkness? Or do you keep them close, burying them, using them for your own ideas? But the greatest gift that you've received is the life of grace that was poured into your soul through the waters of baptism. Because if the master in the story is God, the only thing he can really give us is himself. And the life of grace is the life of God that's given to us, it's shared with us, entrusted to us. How well are you tending to that great gift? Is it visibly multiplied in your life? Do you have something to return to the Master when he returns to you? Have you used your time well? Because we can say that's the other gift, and maybe the only other gift that we truly have. We have this internal life of grace, but we have time. The master was long delayed, and after a long time, he came back. And each was given a gift according to their ability. We don't see any notion of comparison, of being jealous because one got more than the other. There was a humble acceptance of what was given to them. Those who knew the Father, who knew the Master, were able to do good works with the gift that they had received. As you take a look at your life, as you prepare for that day of the thief in the night who's coming, that final judgment, where's the fruit in your life? Christ is expecting it. Do you have something to return to the Master? Christ invites you every day into this intimate relationship with Him as He pours Himself out to you time and time again so that you can come to know Him, be in intimate relationship with Him, so that His thoughts become your thoughts, His ways become your ways, that His will becomes your will. You want what He wants, why He wants it, when He wants it, how He wants it. This should be the effect of grace in our life. But so often, we get stuck in the prison of ourselves. But we doubt the goodness of God. We doubt the life of grace within us. And so we do nothing. We hold tight. We close ourselves off. We bury ourselves. Christ entrusts Himself to you. In a very real, particular way, He trusts Himself to us in the Holy Eucharist. If you're in a state of grace today, and you are able to come forward to receive Him, receive that gift anew, and then put it into practice, living a life of virtue, a life of grace, and allow that joy, the abundant life of God within you, to multiply, so that when He comes, you can point to all the many and various fruits in your life, because you've used your time well, and you've allowed that grace of God to expand and to multiply within you. This is what Christ is inviting you today, to receive and to share the abundant life, the life of joy. Again, the final day is coming, but you need not fear. It's not a day of darkness. It's a day of light. It's a day of abundant joy. And if you respond well, you'll hear those words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter your master's joy."